Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. We are live on the air with me, May Pang, and Cynthia Nielsen. And you know what? It's amazing. After that beautiful harvest moon, I hope you got a chance to see it down there in Nashville, Miss Cynthia.
No.
No. Okay.
It was cloudy,
well,
but I did get my howl on. Did you see it? Did you see it?
Yeah, I did.
Did you see it when it turned blood?
Yes, I took bits of it.
Yeah.
I did take some photos as much as I could in the night, and then all of a sudden the cloud kept coming in. Every time I'm about to take a photo, the cloud would just come right over it, and I was like not very happy. But it was a great weekend. I had a very small by my standard, little barbecue impromptu at the last minute. I just wanted an unplugged version of my big one. Mojo could sit down and talk to everyone, and it was great. People brought acoustic guitars, and they sang, and my friend Lisa Brigantino, I mean, she's so talented. She brought out her accordion, her guitar, her violin. I was like, wow.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, she was amazing.
I'm going to have to Photoshop myself into those pictures, I guess. I don't know. I saw Corinne was there, our buddy Corinne Trang. She's the Asian
Absolutely.
Julia Childs. Yeah.
Yes.
I was like bummed. I pouted a bit.
Oh.
I'm not going to lie. Not going to lie.
Well, listen.
I love your version. Wait. I love your version of an unplugged party. Your version of an unplugged party is they play acoustic instruments. My version of an unplugged means it's no crock pot. We buy the barbecue down the street. You know, that's my unplugged, okay?
Well, you know what? Mark Preston, you know my friend Mark Preston. I mean, he and Suzanne, my friend Suzanne Williams, they were coaxing me into having one last, you know, hurrah, because I didn't have my big one this year because I was away, obviously, in Liverpool. And I did it, and it was, you know what, everybody appreciated not having a big one, the people that I did invite. There were only about 40 or so people at this little gathering. I know it sounds like a lot, but it really wasn't. And everybody could sit down and we could talk, and we were just having a conversation. And Mark was grilling. He made grilled shrimp, and he made skirt steaks. Well, forget about that. I mean, people were just like milling. They were just hanging off the side of the barbecue. And it was a lot of fun. And I want to thank everyone, Mark especially, for doing all the cooking, the master chef, and then everybody who showed up. And we had a few people, you know, that musicians that dropped by. And my Wendy the Snapple lady was here, too. It was great fun.
Great fun. It looked like fun. It looked like fun. I had I got a pumpkin yesterday. Actually, I got three pumpkins, but one I got, it looks like a Dr. Seuss pumpkin. I put it on my Facebook page. So I did have one great day, but the weather here, it's still warm here, but it's definitely fall. I mean, the leaves are coming down off the trees, you know, right over my sidewalk. You know, nowhere else, just on my sidewalk. But that's apropos.
You know, it's just crazy. And I, you know what? And everybody was singing Beatles songs. Gee. And it was great. I mean, I had people like my friend Eve Brandstein. My friend Bob Wolper, who takes photographs in his spare times of the Fab Four, but he's a lawyer by trade, you know, and he's out there performing. He's singing, and everybody's like, "Whoa, hold on, he could sing!" So he's performing somewhere this week, and weekend coming up, and I'll see where he is, and I'll go and try. Yeah, I mean, everybody has something. It was totally different. My girlfriend from San Francisco showed up. She, she heads in state. She's one of the senior counsel in the state of California on insurance and stuff and fraud, whatever. She was here too. Happened to be here. What can I tell you?
Those parties are always fun, and the people are always fabulous. And, well, you know, this is my favorite time of the year. And, of course, last night with the fabulous blood moon, and tonight is actually the full moon. But, you know, we're kicking off fall May with another gal and what we like to call our Great Broads series. And anybody who knows us knows that you got to really qualify to get in the Great Broads ranks, okay? We don't just allow everybody in. But this particular girl, I'm kind of excited to talk to about. Let's see, where do I begin? She's a two-time Playboy Centerfold and cover girl. She was also Miss January in their 10th anniversary issue of Playboy. Way back when. She's trained bunnies. She's lived in the mansion in Chicago. And you know what? She's what we like to call a triple threat. She's body, she's beautiful, and she's got brains. And
absolutely.
She was flown to the moon by Frank Sinatra.
And how many can say that? Not many.
How many can say that? And we would like to welcome to our show soon-to-be author, former Playboy Playmate Bunny, Sharon Rogers. Hey, Sharon, welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Wow, Sharon. I don't even know. Well, first of all, I'm going to go straight to it because, you know, there's been a lot of news. There's been a lot of chatter, a lot of talk about one of Hugh Hefner's former girlfriends is Holly Madison, who left the Playboy Mansion and carved some kind of career now for herself out of kissing and telling. And now we've got a girl who lived there, knows Hef, you know, talk the talk, walk the walk. Tell us what you think about how Holly is telling her story.
Well, I haven't read the book because I won't buy it, but someday I will read it when I get a free copy. But I feel very, very protective of Hef. I've known him for 53 years. He has been extremely good to me over the years, and he's just a nice person. And I know that he did a lot for Holly. He completely supported her, you know, gave her a place to stay and fed her and, you know, for I think it was like 8 years. And then she wouldn't even be famous if it weren't for him. And he had that show. If he hadn't had the Girls Next Door, nobody would even know who she is. And so she should be grateful for that. And he paid for any plastic surgery that she ever wanted. He even gave her a paying job so that she was working at the studio with the Playmates while they were shooting Playmates. And even when they did test shots and then she would show the test shots to Hef, he would pick out who he wanted for Playmates. And he was paying her a salary and she got to go. And I saw her interviewed on the TV, and she said that they weren't allowed to hardly ever go anywhere or do anything. But she was always free to leave anytime that she wanted to. So there's no ball and chain there. And she fell in love with Criss Angel, and she had an affair with him, and that was what made her leave the mansion. But she makes it sound like Hef kind of pushed her out of the mansion by being mean to her or something. But I think that she owes him nothing but gratitude, and it really ruffles my feathers that she said bad things about him. You know, she just shouldn't. One thing that she got from him, which I envy, Bob Mackie made a beautiful dress that was on the cover of Playboy. Monique St. Pierre was Playmate of the Year, and she had it on the cover, and Holly wanted that dress, and so she got it. And that Bob Mackie dress is worth a fortune. But she doesn't talk about the good stuff. You know, there's a lot of good things that she could have said that she left out.
It does seem like she's biting the hand that fed her. And you know, I'm an opportunist too, Sharon. And I feel like, you know, if you have a story to tell, I think she wants to be relevant, like a lot of people do who have a taste of fame. So how are you going to choose to be relevant? Are you going to choose to be relevant by almost mocking who you were? Because she participated in that life, you know. So now she's trying to make it sound like, you know, it was creepy, it was this, it was that. Well, you know, we all have cringeworthy moments in our life, you know. It's but for her, I find it distasteful too. I think it's just interesting to talk to someone who was, and I don't mean this in a slight, you're an old school Playboy bunny, you know, and you were there in a time when I think there was a little bit more innocence in the sexiness there. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, no, no. I think Hef has evolved over the years. But because when I first met him, it was in 1962, and I was 19 and he was 36. And that was in the 60s. Well, and then the 70s and 80s were a whole different thing. I wasn't part of Playboy during that time, and I never did live in the mansion in L.A. when he moved. I lived in the mansion in Chicago, and I never, ever saw any orgies or group sex or anything, and Hef was always very kind and loving, and I can't think of one bad thing to say about him. He actually saved my life. I was in the hospital and diagnosed with leukemia, and when I called him to tell him, he sent his chauffeur to get me out of the hospital. He put me in a different hospital under his doctor's care, and I was there for a month, and it turned out to be hepatitis and mononucleosis. And then he let me stay in the guest room in his house so that, because I was supposed to lay down while I was in recovery. I was supposed to lay down for 30 days. They didn't want me to get up. And so I had the servants bringing me my meals and taking care of me. And he paid all of my doctor bills. And, I mean, he's done way more than that, too, which I won't go into everything. But he's a good person with a really good heart, and he's a sweet person. And I just don't think she should have done that.
No. Well, let's move on to the story that I know several friends of mine are waiting to hear about. You have a Frank Sinatra story.
Yeah, you know, he had a lot of girlfriends, but I just got fortunate. I went to Las Vegas. I had actually left Playboy, and I was looking for a job, and I thought I would give Las Vegas a try, and he was headlining at Caesar's Palace, and I went there, and he spotted me, and he sent one of his henchmen over and said, "Would you like to meet Frank Sinatra?" And, well, duh, you know, yes. And that night, it was his night, you know, a night off. I can't remember now. It's too long ago, but he worked so many days, and then he went to his compound in Palm Springs, and he had a Learjet. And that night that I met him, he was flying to Palm Springs, so I got to fly on his jet. And when we got on the jet, there was a note there from Elvis Presley. I just missed him by like 5 minutes. And then we took off, and then I stayed at his compound there, and I even got to know his neighbor, Barbara Marks, who he ended up marrying. At the time, they were just friends. They were like next-door neighbors. And then he would go back to Caesar's Palace and do his show. And so it didn't last a long time. I ended up meeting this lady in the beauty shop, and I ended up going to New York when the relationship ended. I don't know what else to tell you unless you have other questions about it.
Well, you know what? I think that there's, here's my take on the whole thing. And I could, you know, before I do that, I got to tell you girls, May, I might've told you this. I have an Elvis Presley story. You want me to share it with you, Sharon?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to see him.
Okay. Okay, well, wait. Now, listen to this. This is how my life goes, okay? I was waiting at a bus stop. I had a job. This was when I was living in Connecticut when I was a teenager. And I had a job, and I was waiting at a bus stop, and I was in front of a hotel. And these two guys came down to me, and they said, Mr. Presley would like to meet you. And I was like, what the hell? I said, somebody comes up to you at a bus stop, and Mr. Had no clue, got on the bus, and as the bus was pulling away, I looked up, and up on the balcony, there was like tin foil and crap on the windows, and there was a fat guy in a robe with sunglasses on, and I said, oh, it was Elvis Presley. I said, I actually told these guys, get away from me. Yeah, like, who are you? Like, oh, Mr. Who's Mr. Presley? I don't have no, get away. And I drove off into, so you know what, May? I could have been the next Priscilla. It could have happened.
Well, I don't know if you would have wanted at that point in time.
Okay, so no Learjet for me, Sharon. Just a city bus, but, you know, that's the way my life went. Okay, so let's talk about Lenny Bruce. I mean, how many people can say, they know Lenny Bruce or knew Lenny Bruce, or just the magnitude of that?
I was very, very close to Lenny for about 3 years. I met him at the Playboy Mansion in Chicago. And he said, if you ever come to Los Angeles, look me up. And he gave me his phone number. And then I ended up moving to Los Angeles prior to the opening of the Playboy Club. And because I was going there to help hire and train and do the pre-publicity for the opening of the club. And I called him up, and he had me move in with his mom, Sally Marr, and his daughter, Kitty Bruce. And Sally raised Kitty, and I stayed with them for about 3 months while I found myself an apartment and a car. And I hung out with Sally a lot, and, you know, we went up to, Lenny had a house up in the Hollywood Hills, and we went up there a lot. And I knew him kind of toward the end when he was having a lot of legal problems, and he had fallen out of a window in San Francisco, and he was severely injured, and he had a cast on his leg that went from his hip all the way down to his foot. And so I had a Cadillac convertible, and so we used to have to, like, pick him up and throw him in the back seat and take him to his lawyers. And plus, he loved Kentucky Fried Chicken. We'd have to take him to get a bucket of chicken. And he needed people to help him type. So I was finding girls that could type and help him with his. He was becoming his own lawyer because all the lawyers were refusing to help him. They just felt like he really,
when you think about the how different it was for him, Sharon, then with his shtick, his humor, his blueness, his frankness, his, you know, how he cursed, how he did, and now the way it's like, I mean, we look at the red carpet and it's like, okay, she's wearing two strings and a star. She's wearing, you know, everybody is pretty much so overtly obscene and sexual now. What Lenny Bruce went through back then now would be laughable. I mean, he was censored left and right. I just think it's funny, May. Remember last week when we were talking to Johnny Eckel, and he said he had a storage thing and he had a lot of Jimi Hendrix's crap in there.
Yeah.
He said, now Sharon, driving Lenny Bruce around so he could get him some Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah, we got Lenny Bruce in the back seat. He needs some Kentucky Fried Chicken. He needs a chicken leg. Come on.
Yeah.
True.
He was at, when I moved to Los Angeles, he was at a point where nobody would hire him anymore, because as soon as he got on stage, there would be 25 policemen in the back, just waiting for him to say a four-letter word so they could arrest him. And so the club owners, they said, you know, we love you, Lenny, and we would hire you, but we're going to lose our business if we hire you, so we can't. So he couldn't work. And the lawyers were giving up on him, and so he had law books, and he was reading them, and he was becoming his own lawyer. And it was just a really difficult time for him. And the night that he died, I went up there with Sally and JoJo, who was as Sally's personal assistant and also Lenny's personal assistant. And we took as much of his stuff out of his house as we could, because we were afraid looters would take things. Mm-hmm. And so I had his stuff for quite a while, but then Sally, I ended up giving it to Sally, and but I knew Sally for about 7 years. I think it was only 3 years that I knew Lenny before he died. It was really tragic. He was so committed to change the pornography laws. You know, he couldn't understand how you could go see West Side Story and they would sing G Officer Krupke, fuck you, and he couldn't say it on stage and he mm-hmm. would be arrested and put in jail. You know, why can you say it on Broadway and not in a nightclub? And he just got really into it, and he was fighting for a cause.
And his fight actually did succeed, unfortunately, after he was gone. I mean, he, as far as censorship goes and as far as freedom of speech, Lenny Bruce, he was a genius. And the fact that you have these stories, now I know you and I had a little chit-chat back and forth online, and you're writing a book, correct?
I was. I haven't written for 2 years, and I need to start again. So.
Gina sounds like me. That's what I know. I know that one.
I have 7 chapters written, and then I lost the discipline. I need to get myself in gear again. So.
Get motivated back to it.
Yeah.
You have to do it, Sharon, so that you can tell the story. See, I'm on May's back all the time. These are your stories, girls. Your stories. And if somebody's going to tell them, they should be you, not somebody else.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Who's talking about who? You're another
okay.
one. Don't even.
She's taking
tell
me
to
task.
To me.
It's true,
you're,
Sharon.
You're
I'm just
too.
As bad. Yeah, I'm a procrastinator too. You know, it's like. But I mean, in your case, and I mean my, you know, I don't have the same, you know, claims to fame like you girls do. You know, like I said, Elvis Presley waved to me from a balcony at the Hilton in Hartford, Connecticut. You know, like. I missed my chance, Mr. Presley. Who the hell is Mr. Presley? Yeah, but I mean, just imagine that, like two big goons coming up to you at a bus stop. I was like, what? You know, it really freaked me out a little. Now I would be like, oh, tell Elvis unless he's got some pizza and some good bread and wine, I'm not interested, you know. But anyway, But you girls, you've got to get. We're going to keep checking on you, Sharon, because we want to hear that you made some progress with this book. Because I think that you will tell the stories in the way that people want to hear them. You know, it won't be embellished, it won't be broad stroked, and it won't be made sexually sensational just to sell a story. See, that's what I think happens now. You know, and we really loved having you on the show, and will you keep us posted about your progress?
Yeah, I'm hoping I can find a publisher that wants to publish it. Maybe that'll get me going. But
yeah. Well, it's difficult. I certainly think, you know, it is difficult, but you know what? There may be a listener out there, you know, that knows somebody, because like I said, your stories are above the norm, as is my girl May, and we'll keep the feelers out for you too. But you know, when you do get something going, would you come back and talk to us about it?
Sure. Anytime.
Great.
Super.
Okay.
All right, Sharon, we're gonna let you go and have your coffee now since we got you up at the crack of dawn. But thanks for coming on the show. We really loved having you.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Take
thank
care.
You.
Have a wonderful
okay.
day.
You too. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. You know, see, May, you've had that jet-setting life. You know, I've had little bites here and there.
Don't give
you
me
know,
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah, like you've
Frank
never
Sinatra's
had any
Frank Sinatra's Learjet. But don't you think it's interesting? See, I didn't know that Barbara Marx was his next-door neighbor. Clever girl. Clever girl. Yeah. She kept, you know, she kept saying, here's a cup of sugar for you to borrow, Frankie. Over the fence.
Well, you know, what am I going to tell you?
Well, you know something? I really hope that Sharon does write her stories down because, you know, that time period, I mean, you remember, you were there. You've been to the Playboy Mansion.
Yes,
you know,
I was at the Playboy Mansion
think,
in L.A., yeah.
Do you think it was different, May? Do you think it was more innocent, the sex?
I think everything back then was a lot more, I don't know, it was a lot of classier type. It was classier than where it is now, I think,
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. You know, when you know, you see some of those older books and some of these mistresses or whatever they all talk about that, you know, of the presidents, you know, all the different ones, they didn't go running and saying, oh, you know who I slept with. You know, they didn't
mm-hmm.
do that. They were more discreet about who they were with or whatever, and it just carried. Now it's like, you know, if you go out with somebody, it's already on the front page of the news. You know, so
exactly,
it's a little different back then and now, and it's I don't know. I just find
Do you think that's why and it rankles me? So I can't even imagine how it rankles you when you. Is that a word, rankle? I don't even know.
I don't know, but we'll find out.
It is now. It is now. It's a May Pang and Cynthia Nielsen original. When you read stuff about you and John, or people allude that they were there, or they describe something that happened that you know didn't happen, that has to drive you insane.
Oh, it drives me insane all the time. And I love it because they are the people that come back and tell the story. They think they know it better than me. And I look at them, I say, but you weren't there. I was. And that's mm-hmm. the only way to, then they'll say, you try to shut them down. And they say, but it's written in all these books that this is the way it happened. And I go, yeah. There's enough lies when it goes back out all the time, it becomes the truth because it must be true because it was on TMZ. It must be true because it was on the internet, you know, that whole thing. And you know what? I've had it not that long ago, just recently, somebody else said something. Oh, I remember this. And I said, that isn't the way it happened. Oh? And then they stop because they realize they've been caught. So,
well, you know, I think a lot of times people want to be part of that story. They want to act like they were more important to the story than, you know, than it really happened. And I understand that because there's such a drive now for everybody to have their even 15 seconds of fame, you know.
Yes.
But, you know, in your case, in Sharon's case, in anyone who's actually been someone in that situation where you're not exactly the one in the limelight, but you're in the limelight because they're in the they're in the spotlight. It has to be very, very, very frustrating.
I've been fighting it for a long time, and it's still going on. And I love it when they come in and they attack me, and I get it all the time. But you know what? I let it roll off my back because they weren't there. And almost every bit of John's time period of that, quote, lost weekend, as everybody refers to it, and that's the only way I refer to it at times because that's when they know where it is. Most of them got the info from my book, and it started from my book, and then somebody else takes it, and it goes on to another story, but it takes a life of its own. So I know what happened. I was there, and I can
tell you. Well, you were there. Well, and all the more why I need to beat you over the head about getting your book back out there.
I know.
Sharon gets hers out there. I hope you get, and then you can beat me up too. But listen, next week Vince Martell of Vanilla Fudge is coming back. He's got a lot of stuff going on. He's coming back to bring us up to date on it. And the week after that, we've got Augie Myers. So we've got a couple of great weeks coming up.
We've got a good And then it's my birthday.
May's birthday. It's
a
big
party. We have a party. It's the biggest.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, Chicklet.
Yep.
We're out of time.
Well, I'll be talking to you next week or somewhere along the way. Okay.
That's my Miss May Pang, and I'm Cynthia Nielsen. Big thanks and shout out to Gary Raychak for setting us up with Sharon Rogers. And you've been listening to Dinner Specials with May Pang and Nielsen. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you.